In situations perceived in terms of duality. Translation by the disciples of Shiva Indreshika Isi Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Prabhupada. To serve the spiritual master, the disciples should learn cleanliness, austerity, tolerance, silence, study of Vedic knowledge, simplicity, celibacy, non-violence, and equanimity in the face of material dualities such as heat and cold, happiness and distress. Please repeat after me. To serve the spiritual master, the disciples should learn cleanliness, austerity, tolerance, silence, study of Vedic knowledge, simplicity, celibacy, non-violence, and equanimity in the face of material duality. Such as heat and cold. Happiness and distress. Om Gyan Atimirandasya Gyan Vinashlatya Chakshur Yenan Tasmai Guruvesh
Shri
Guruvesh Shri Guruvesh Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gargha Shri Vasudev Gaur. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So, we see in this verse the qualities that disciples should develop to serve the spiritual master and mission. Actually, there's a two-page purport here also, which describes the various qualities. So, I'll read the purport and then I'll explain the qualities. So, to serve the spiritual master, a disciple needs to develop these qualities. And actually, these qualities are in Bhagavad Gita, they are mentioned as items of knowledge. In the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, text number 8 to 12, the various items of knowledge which one should develop so that one can reach, which will help one to reach the absolute truth, or which will help one realize Krishna. And the first item of knowledge there is humility. And Prabhupada explains humility as that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. So it's very interesting where Prabhupada has written like that. You know, we might say somebody is very humble, but actually a person is really humble when he's not anxious for satisfaction, you know, for others' satisfaction on himself. So that's what Prabhupada means by humility. And unless one is humble, one cannot learn. So one cannot acquire knowledge. Even in the material sphere, just like, you know, a student is going to university, and if one is in a very challenging mood, you know, one challenges whatever the professor says, or one does not hear in a submissive mood, one cannot acquire knowledge. I remember for myself, like when I used to go to university, sit in the back seat and make a lot of noises and create a lot of disturbance. So, you know, I was just not in the mood to hear. Too proud, you know, I know everything. So, like that, it is very hard to acquire knowledge. So, because of the material conception of life, one hankers for satisfaction. Because when one thinks one is the body, then you know, then honor and dishonor, they pertain to the body. So the one hankers for honor and is disturbed when there is dishonor. So, but one who is really self-realized, he understands that he is not the body, that these things are only meant for the body. So he's not affected by that. And also we see these days, by the material advancement of civilization, actually people are becoming more and more puffed up. You know, generally when somebody acquires material knowledge, they become very puffed up. Like, they think they know everything. Or they think their knowledge can save them. And, you know, the max you can go is like when somebody says, I'm God. Then, you know, he's so puffed up that, you know, that he's saying he's God, I'm God. These days, you meet many people, they say, I'm God. So this shows how actually puffed up they are, you know. That they don't want to surrender to Krishna, and they're so puffed up that they're thinking they're God. So how can they accept the knowledge, or how can they hear from a spiritual source that actually they are not God, but they are part and parcel of God. They are the servant of God. So, you know, one way or other, the living entity is always subordinate. Either we can be subordinate to Krishna, or we'll be subordinate to the material energy. You know, they're thinking they're God, but at the same time, they can't figure out why they're growing old, you know, why their hair is going grey, why they're getting diseased. So the material conception of life actually makes one very puffed up. And also, so here it mentions to serve the spiritual master. And in the previous verses we saw, especially text number 21, Tasmad Gurum Prapadyate, that why one needs a spiritual master. In the last few verses we've been discussing that. And if we look at Arjuna's situation in the Bhagavad Gita, actually Prabhupada mentions then the perplexities of life, they behoove one to approach a spiritual master, a bona fide spiritual master. So in this world, there are so many perplexities. One doesn't want perplexities and anxieties. They come by themselves. Because that's the nature of this world, to actually frustrate us so that we can approach a spiritual master to make the solution to the problems of life. And as Gopal Mishra was explaining a couple of days ago, that one should approach a spiritual master for what kind of problems? You know, I've got a toothache, so one should go to a spiritual master. Gurudev, I've got a toothache. Can you help me fix it? No. You know, one's tire is punctured, car tire is punctured, so you approach a spiritual master. Or, you know, just like one doesn't go to a bank to say, you know, I've got a stomachache. Or one doesn't go to a doctor to say there's a problem in the radiator of my car. So similarly, when one wants to make a solution to the real problems of life, which are birth, death, old age, disease, then one should approach the spiritual master. Because the spiritual master can make solution to the ultimate problems of life. You know, if we've got some bodily problems, then one can approach a doctor or someone else. Generally we see, especially if you're wearing saffron, especially among Indians, a lot of people come and they say, please give me blessing. You know, I need a job, can you please pray for me? Can you please give me a blessing so that I can get a job? Or I need to get my permanent residency, can you please help me out? So no, one should not approach a spiritual master or saintly people for these reasons. Now one should approach him to inquire into the Absolute Truth, Athato Brahma Jigyasa. One wants to know what is the purpose of life, why am I here, why am I suffering? So then one should approach a spiritual master, so that one can make the solution to the problems of life. So if you look in Arjuna's situation, actually Arjuna knew the Shastra. He was very learned in the Shastra. And does anyone know what were the five reasons why Arjuna didn't want to fight the battle of Kurukshetra?
Compassion.
Compassion, yes. So Arjuna was very compassionate, had a lot of compassion for his relatives and friends, because they were in relationship to him. They were in relationship to his body. So in the bodily conception of life, one's compassion is misdirected to one's, anything relating to one's body, you know, one is compassionate to it. So Arjuna was compassionate towards his family members, you know, why should I kill them? You know, my guru, why should I kill my guru, Dronacharya, my grandfather, Bhishma Dev? So he was compassionate towards his friends, relatives, fathers, like that. And the second reason?
Reactions.
And
sinful reactions.
He was fearful of sinful reactions. And one of the reasons he didn't want to fight was also enjoyment. You know, Arjun was saying, actually these are very powerful arguments if you analyze them. They actually, from a mundane sense, they are very powerful arguments. If one doesn't have a spiritual authority, or you know, one is not getting guidance, then one would think these arguments are actually very valid. So one of his arguments was enjoyment. He's saying, you know, I can fight this war, I might win it, but then those who I'm fighting for, they'll be dead. Who will I show off all my wealth to, all the kingdom to? Who will I enjoy with? Everybody will be dead. So one of his reasons. And one was, any other ones, you know? Bhakti Shastri scholars are here. Go on. So you must have done the first chapter still. Okay.
Worried
about the result.
Indecision,
yes. One was destruction of family tradition. So Arjun was saying, if I fight this war, I kill my superiors like Bhishma and Drona and all the elders, then there won't be any family traditions left. So in the Vedic society, we see these family traditions are there so that society in general can progress towards the ultimate goal, Krishna consciousness. That's what these family traditions are for. And family traditions, they are upheld by the elders or the seniors in the, or the village elders. That's why it is very important to have village elders who can actually, because of their maturity and experience, they can guide us in Krishna consciousness. You know, because one, you know, goes through life and he gets a lot of wisdom and knowledge. So Arjun was saying, if the elders are destroyed, then irreligion will flourish in the dynasty. And as a result, the women will become unchaste. And then there will be unwanted progeny, or Varna Shankara, which will lead to destruction of family traditions, and all community projects will be destroyed. So, and then one of Arjun's arguments was, as you mentioned, fear of sinful reactions. You know, Arjun was saying, you know, what is the point of killing my guru? Just imagine, you know, put yourself in that situation. You have to fight with your spiritual master, and you have to kill him. You know, it is actually a very tough situation to be in. And Arjuna was saying, you know, he was telling Krishna, you know, you don't fight with your father Ugrasen or your guru Sandipani Muni, but you're telling me to fight. You're telling me to fight with Dronacharya. He's my military guru. He's saying, you know, what is the point of achieving the kingdom? I might rule over the kingdom for 30, 40, 50 years, but then the sinful reaction I'll get for killing my elders and my spiritual master. So Arjun was very fearful of sinful reactions like that. And he was saying, it's not worth it, all this, you know, killing millions of people. And indecision, you know. And then, after giving all these arguments, you know, very, very good arguments, Arjun was saying, I'm not sure whether we should conquer over them, or, you know, let them conquer over us. So we see actually in the material conception of life, you know, one gets perplexed. You know, Arjun knew the Shastra in and out, and he gave his arguments. Still he was in anxiety. Still he was not happy. He put his bow Gandiva down, despite all these good arguments. So then he was asking Krishna, you tell me for certain what is best for me. I'm a soul surrendered unto you and I'm your disciple. So we see the right thing which Arjun did is actually he surrendered unto Krishna. He figured out that, you know, I can know Shastra. And then even Arjun said, I can even have an unrivaled kingdom on this earth, or power like in the heavenly planets. Still I won't be happy. So we can also see by the advancement of material civilization, one cannot actually make a solution to the problems of life. One has to approach a spiritual master coming in the line of a disciplic succession to make a solution to the problems. And the original spiritual master is Krishna himself, who speaks to Arjuna on the battlefield. So we have to, and actually it is a must to accept a spiritual master if one wants to make progress in spiritual life. So then these qualities are mentioned which actually help us to render nice service to the spiritual master. And so the first quality is saucham or cleanliness. So I'll read the purport. So it's said here, saucham or cleanliness refers to both internal and external purity. One should remain externally clean by bathing with soap and water at least once and if possible 3 times daily. One is considered internally pure when he is free from the pollution of false pride and egotism. So cleanliness. Prabhupada says, or in this common saying, godliness is, what's that? Cleanliness is next to godliness. So we have to be clean externally and internally. So externally clean means to bathe 2 or 3 times a day with soap and water and to wear very clean clothes. Actually, it is said a brahmachari should bathe once a day, a householder 2 times a day, a sannyasi 3 times a day. Why is it like that? Because a brahmachari, he's at the ashram of the guru, so he's not going out much in the traditional sense. So he can bathe once a day, he'll be clean. A grihastha or a householder, he's engaging in so many occupational duties, he's going out, dealing with people, so he should bathe twice a day. And a sannyasi, he's always traveling. They don't stay in one place. They keep traveling from one place to another. So they should bathe 3 times a day. So external cleanliness is very important, especially even our surroundings. Prabhupada, you know, would say that ISKCON should be revolutionary clean. Because unless we are externally clean, how can we approach Krishna? Or even Krishna won't come near us unless we are clean. So cleanliness is a very important part. And then one has to be internally clean also. You know, one can be externally clean, but being internally clean is also very important. And one becomes internally clean by chanting Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. So generally our consciousness is infected with lust, anger, greed, envy, badness, illusion. These things are called the dirt on the mirror of the mind. So by chanting Hare Krishna, one can cleanse the dirt of the mirror of the mind. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says in his Shikshashtakam prayer. And also there is that mantra, Om Apavitra Pavitrava Sarvavastam Gadopiva. So when one remembers the lotus eyed personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, one becomes internally and externally pure. But that doesn't mean we don't have to take a bath. No, I just simply remember Krishna, I don't need to take a shower. But, you know, in cases, in circumstances where we can't say, cleanse ourselves externally, we should remember Krishna. One becomes pure. So, cleanliness. Next one is tapa or austerity. Austerity means that despite the irrational impulses of the mind, one should remain fixed in executing the proper duty in life. Specifically, one must control burning anger and the urge for wanton sex life. If a human being does not control the impulses of lust, anger and greed, he loses his power to understand his actual situation. Human life is a golden opportunity to solve the overwhelming problems of birth, death, old age and disease. According to Vishnu Purana 3.8.9, Varnashrama Charapata Purushena Parapuman Vishnu Raradyate Pantha Nanya Tattosha Karana. Every human being can achieve spiritual perfection by dedicating the fruits of its prescribed work to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Similarly, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna clearly states, Sve Sve Karmani Abhirata Samsiddhin Labhate Nara. One does not have to adopt a monastic life or live in the forest as a yogi. One can achieve perfection by dedicating his occupational duties to the Supreme Lord. Similarly, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said, Namashraya kari yatane tumi sakaha apane kaja. If one sincerely takes shelter of the holy names of Krishna by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, he will achieve spiritual perfection within the compass of his normal daily activities. Unfortunately, if a human being neglects the regulative principles of civilized life that prohibit illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication and gambling, he will surely be overwhelmed by the waves of lust and anger, which completely cover one's consciousness of the reality of spiritual life and draw one to engage in the phantasmagoria of the temporary material body. So we can see what austerity is defined as. Basically, here austerity is defined as following the four regulative principles. And even Prabhupada said that if you simply do this austerity, chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra 16 rounds daily with attention, then actually automatically everything else will follow. And then we can easily follow the four regulative principles. So the austerity in Kali Yuga is to follow these four regulative principles. Because unless one doesn't follow the four regulative principles, you know, one cannot come to the human platform. And one cannot focus on Krishna. So this is the basic prerequisite. So in our preaching, we don't go and tell people follow the four regs. You know, it's just like impossible. Yeah, but that's why in our preaching activities, whatever one's condition is, it is emphasized that they chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Then gradually all these things will follow. So by chanting Hare Krishna, one can follow these four things. And then the next one is titiksham or tolerance. Tolerance indicates that a transcendentalist must be forgiving. The material world is full of embarrassing and irritating situations. And unless one is inclined to be very much forgiving, he will become infected by a vindictive mentality, which spoils one's spiritual consciousness. So, anyway, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Trinadapi Samichena, Trivariva Sahishnana, Marina Martena, Kitanya Sahari. That in order to chant the holy names of the Lord, one should chant the holy names of the Lord in a humble state of mind. So humility, which was the first quality. And unless one is humble like a blade of grass, it is very difficult to chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. And tolerance. Mahaprabhu says one should be tolerant like a tree. You know, if you look at a tree, you know, tree will be standing in all conditions, whether there's intense heat or there's cold, there is raging wind, the tree will still be there. Because unless we develop this quality of tolerance, it is very difficult to be focused in spiritual life. Because the nature of this material world is that there has to be agitation. That's the nature of this world. There will be heat and cold, happiness and distress. Also Prabhupada says in the purport of the Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, Matra Sparsha Sukuntaya, that a woman should cook in the summer also, whether it is so hot, it is 40 or 50 degrees. You know, she will still cook out of duty. Or whether it is cold, it is recommended one should still take a shower. So unless we can tolerate these conditions of life, how will we tolerate the conditions of life at the time of death? You know, if we can't tolerate when we have a young and healthy body, how will we tolerate the conditions when we are at our deathbed? Actually, at the deathbed, you know, things are much worse. You know, one cannot breathe properly, the body is filled up with mucus. And it is very hard to remember Krishna. So unless we can remember Krishna when we are young and healthy, so that's why we should practice to be more tolerant. Because the material world will always agitate us. You know, something or the other will happen. That's anyway, we see, especially when one becomes a devotee, so many people go against you. You know, your family members, they protest, you know, what are you doing? Your friends, they make fun of you, all your friends will dump you. Everybody leaves you. or they criticize it. Even we see with, in the Srimad Bhagavatam with Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj was only 5 years old. But his fault was he became a devotee of Krishna. And his father, Hiranyakashipu, he was enraged that his son became a devotee. And Prahlad Maharaj was tortured to such extent that he was thrown from the cliff of a mountain. He was tried to be crushed, you know, trampled by elephants. He was put in burning oil. He was put in a cave with full of snakes. So one has to be tolerant. His fault was he became a devotee of Krishna. So naturally when we take up Krishna consciousness, there has to be a lot of opposition, especially in preaching. Preaching, Prabhupada said, a preacher has to be tolerant. Otherwise one cannot preach. Because, especially like you're doing book distribution, somebody might come and spit at your face, spit on your face. Or generally we see, you know, when I go out, at least one person abuses, you know. Somebody will abuse you at least once a day. And, you know, if they punch you, it's not very surprising. So, you know, there's so many, you know, past stories of devotees who have been punched while preaching, doing book distribution. So, you know, one has to learn to be tolerant. Otherwise, as it's mentioned here, one will have a very vindictive mentality. If one is not tolerant, or one is not forgiving, one will always want to take revenge from them. Then that will actually impede our preaching. So, tolerance is a very important quality. And even when we have to chant Hare Krishna, one has to be tolerant. Sometimes, you know, some people are chanting so loudly. You know, sometimes we have to tolerate, you know, you can't do much. Otherwise, you know, otherwise we get agitated ourselves. Or, you know, sometimes people are doing so many things, sometimes in japa. You just have to tolerate it. And the next quality, maunam. Maunam or silence means that one should not speak on worthless or frivolous topics, but should discuss the actual issues of human life, such as going back home, back to Godhead. Remaining completely silent is a symptom of ignorance. A stone is silent due to a lack of consciousness. Since every material thing has a spiritual counterpart, the Vedic Shastras contain negative and positive injunctions. Corresponding to the negative injunction against speech is the positive injunction that one should always speak about Krishna. Satatam Kirtayantama. One should always speak about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, glorifying His holy name, fame, pastimes, entourage and so on. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also it is stated, one should always hear about, glorify, meditate upon and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. In the 21st verse of this chapter it was stated, Shabde Pare Cha Nishnatam. The bona fide spiritual master is expert in Shabde Pare, or the transcendental sound vibration describing the spiritual world. One cannot artificially remain empty-headed or speechless as advocated by foolish proponents of concocted systems of meditation and yoga. But one should be so absorbed in the loving service of Krishna and so lovingly attracted to praising Krishna that one has not a single moment free to speak nonsense. That is the purport of the word mauna. So, this is another item of knowledge, mauna. Generally, if you tell somebody, you know, sometimes people ask you, so you Hare Krishna, what do you do? You know, we are going to uni, we are acquiring knowledge. You tell them, I'm also acquiring knowledge. I'm learning how to be humble, tolerant, simple, silent. All these various items, they'll think, you know, you're crazy. Because mundane knowledge is considered when you have a lot of degrees against your name, you know, PhD, this degree, that degree. They consider that to be knowledge. But Krishna says, this is real knowledge. We see, you know, people have so much mundane knowledge, but their character is actually zero. If you look at teenagers these days, their behavior is actually shocking. You know, they're so violent, they're so rude, you know. And here it is mentioned silence. So, say silence means one should not speak on frivolous topics. So generally we see the nature of the tongue is to croak. Prabhupada says, just like the frog croaks, it attracts the snake of death. So when one uses the tongue to speak on mundane subject matter, actually he's attracting the snake of death. Because unless one glorifies Krishna, one cannot make a solution to the problems of life. So we see generally people are, if you catch a tram to the city or you are in public transport, you know, if you go to some cafe or something, people are talking so much nonsense. Because the nature of the tongue is to say something, you know. And actually the tongue is the most difficult sense to control. We have there's the tongue, the belly and the genitals in the straight line. So if one can control the tongue, one can control all the other organs and senses. So first one should learn how to control the tongue. So unless one is Krishna conscious, one cannot control the tongue. It is impossible. So the tongue has two functions, to eat and to speak. So we see one whose tongue is uncontrolled, they eat all kinds of nonsense or garbage. Like garbage like meat, you know, these days I was actually on the temple website, it says Kurma Prabhu's will be aired on TV by one of the most popular cooks in Australia. So I just clicked on that link, it took me to their website, and some of the items was like what they cook, the famous cooks of Australia, they cook is like crocodile, you know, crocodile meat or kangaroo meat. So when one's tongue is out of control, one will eat all kinds of nonsense or garbage. It's like a pig will eat anything. But Prabhupada said if one simply eats prasadam, then his tongue will be controlled. So one should eat Krishna prasadam. And the nature of the tongue is always to speak. So if you're going in a tram, people are, you know, always talking about the Melbourne Cup or this or that, so many things. And such kind of talking actually doesn't lead them anywhere. You know, they're not happy when they talk all such kind of talk. But here it is said, one should engage one's speaking propensity in Krishna's service. In Krishna consciousness, there's this positive side of everything we do. There's a positive injunction. So one should glorify Krishna. One should be anxious to spread Krishna's glory. One should use one's tongue to glorify Krishna. And one should glorify Krishna's holy name, pastimes. So actually, the whole Krishna book one can glorify, or so many Krishna's pastimes are there. And also we see there are so many spiritual societies in which it is emphasized one should be silent. You know, sometimes there are many sadhus in India, like they take the Vanabrat, the vow of silence. So they take the vow, they won't speak for a certain period of time. But the nature of the tongue is to speak, so then they write. So then they write with a chalk, you know, and then they communicate with each other like this. So the nature is still to speak or to talk. So, you know, when one is Krishna conscious, that is then one can really speak. So devotees, they always talk in relationship to Krishna. When they converse with each other, one should keep Krishna in the center. So our talk should be centered around Krishna, or how to spread Krishna's glory. Sometimes even devotees talk about mundane things, but if it's in relation to preaching, then it's okay. And the next item is Svadhyayam, means that one should study Vedic literature according to his individual ability and also teach others. In Bhagavad Gita it is mentioned that a Brahman should have the qualities of Jnana and Vijnana, scriptural knowledge and practical realized application of knowledge. Specifically, one should study these books which increase one's desire to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His Divine Grace, Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya, Ashtotrashata, Sri Srimad Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, has written in a few short years a veritable library of transcendental knowledge. So, here it is mentioned about study of Vedic literature. So again, in the mundane sense, we have this propensity to read. You know, If you go to a bookshop, bookshops are full with all kinds of mundane books. Actually, Prabhupada said in one of the purposes of the 7th canto that it is actually sinful to kill trees, to print paper, not used for glorifying Krishna. Because the tree is also a living entity, so to take its life unnecessarily for printing all rubbish literature is very sinful. So if you go to like so many big bookshops, they're full of nonsense literature. But like this Srimad Bhagavatam, one literature in itself, this is perfect because it is glorifying Krishna. So a Brahmana, it is mentioned that he should study the Vedic literature and he should teach it to others. So if a Brahmana is not imparting this knowledge to others, he'll actually lose the knowledge he has himself. So in spiritual life, the more you give, the more you get. The more we give Krishna consciousness to others, the more we get Krishna consciousness for ourselves. And also it is said, one should read the books to increase one's service propensity. You know, it is not that one should read books all day and night. One is simply reading books. One should read Prabhupada's books, and then actually these, in the beginning we read the books for information content. I can say for myself, like I went to the Bhagavatam for just to see what's in it. But gradually then that should change to that we should be more enthused to serve Krishna by reading Prabhupada's books. That Prabhupada's books, we should read every day 1 or 2 hours, so that these books will inspire us to serve Krishna better. Otherwise it is very difficult to keep going in Krishna consciousness if we don't read Prabhupada's books regularly. So Prabhupada's books actually inspire us to go further. And also the purport says that one should not read books to get a lot of distinction. Sometimes one can read so many books just to show that one is very scholarly. One knows all the Puranas, so many Puranas, the Dharma Shastra, So one should not read to make a show of learning. So one should read actually to serve Krishna, to have developed the desire to serve Krishna more. And the next one is simplicity or straightforwardness. So simplicity means to present the truth in a very straightforward way, even if it is to one's enemy also. That is true simplicity, without being duplicitous. And next one is brahmacharya or celibacy. So we see actually celibacy is very important in spiritual life. Even if one wants to do anything material, like many of the most famous scientists or the world's greatest people, they actually glorify celibacy. Because unless one is celibate, his mind will be very agitated. So that's why even in spiritual life, brahmacharya is very important. So there are two types of brahmacharyas. One is Naishtika brahmacharya and one is Upapramana. Naishtika is one who is celibate for his whole life. And Upapramana is who is celibate for some time but then he marries. But even one who is a Grihastha is also a Grihastha brahmacharya. Because they are following the four regulative principles and one of them is no illicit sex. So that's the act we see in today's society. Sex life is glorified so much. If you tell them you're celibate, they think there's something wrong with you. That you're not normal. But actually, when one engages in sex life, one enforces the bodily conception of life. It makes us think that we are this material body. And then one becomes attached to so many other things on that basis. So that's why celibacy is very, very important in spiritual life. So whether one is a Grihastha or a Brahmachari, in both cases they are Brahmachari, if they are following the principle. And the next one is ahimsa or non-violence. And actually Prabhupada explains non-violence in a very interesting way in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada says non-violence means not to give distress to somebody. Not to give distress to someone. And generally people think being non-violent means not to harm somebody's body or not to kill somebody. So if you are not killing animals, then you are non-violent. You know, people think like that. So, or even these days they recognize that violence also means that if you agitate somebody's mind. So now they've realized that also. But actually, being non-violent means to understand the laws of nature. Because if we see the laws of nature, they are actually imposing violence. You know, like there's birth, death, old age and disease being enforced. So that is actually violence. You know, we are forced to grow old, we are forced to take birth, we are forced to get disease. This is violence. So one is truly non-violent when one preaches Krishna consciousness. Then one is non-violent. Because one is teaching others how to come out of this violence being inflicted upon us. So that is true non-violence. It's interesting how the Krishna conscious perspective of non-violence. And the next one, last one is equanimity. That is very similar to tolerance. One should be one should not be disturbed by heat and cold, happiness and distress. That is. So the point is, these items of knowledge, they should lead one to Krishna consciousness. If we are not Krishna conscious and we are following all these items of knowledge, then we haven't actually reached the goal. Then that's not the point of these items of knowledge. The point of these items of knowledge is to help us become Krishna conscious. So also it is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam that if one renders full devotional service to the personality of Godhead, one will develop the qualities of the demigods. One will automatically develop these qualities. So if we follow the process of Krishna consciousness, one can actually develop these qualities also. And side by side also we should cultivate these qualities more and more so that we can serve our spiritual master more effectively. Otherwise if we don't strive to develop these qualities, it is difficult to serve Krishna. One will find out of impediments. We'll just stop here and see if there are any questions, comments, or corrections. Yes, sir.
With the non-violence,
yeah.
I've heard there's like different acts of violence to plunder and to
take.
Like if someone plunders money or if someone takes someone's wife or...
Those are six acts of aggressors.
Oh, okay.
Aggressive, yeah.
Do you know that?
One is, actually one can kill somebody, one can kill an aggressor if he's done any of those six things.
Do you know what those six things are?
Six things are to plunder somebody's riches.
Right.
Just mention the one you said.
To take one's wife,
to plunder riches, to take somebody's land. To burn somebody's house, to administer poison. And what else? Yeah, so.
It's in the purport.
Yeah, it's in the purport. It's in the first chapter somewhere.
Yeah,
so if one is an aggressor, actually you can kill him in the Vedic sense. But if you do in today's government, you might, you know, end up in jail or something.
I think the other one is if someone's attacking you with sharp people or something.
Sorry?
If someone's attacking you with a sharp weapon or something.
Yeah, if somebody is attacking you with weapons, you can defend yourself. So these are the six types of aggressive. Yeah, they are also imposing borders. But the real borders is to the violence being imposed by the laws of nature. And actually, if we don't reach Krishna consciousness, then we are being violent. Because we are not actually helping people out. We are actually perpetuating their stay in material existence. So to preach Krishna consciousness is to be non-violent.
Yeah. So I heard Prabhupada saying, in a field, one natural duty is the greatest act of violence for one's
self.
Sorry, to interfere with one's natural duty, whatever that may be, that's the greatest act of violence. Like if someone is a gardener and we're going to wreck their garden or something. You know, or interfere with someone's service.
Devotees also interfere in other people's lives, but to give them Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, so that is a
nice example. Yeah, if someone else comes in and says, don't be
afraid. Sometimes, you know, you give Krishna consciousness and people get agitated. You know, you've experienced that, you know. Mm-hmm. They say, why, you know, Hare Krishna is agitating us. But actually we are being, you know, this is real non-modern. We're helping them.
Yeah, and if we have non-violence, creates compassion in society. Is there other qualities
If you are compassionate, then only you can be non-violent. So first, one has to be compassionate. Unless one has compassion, how can one help others? Mm-hmm. Even materially speaking, unless people are compassionate, they don't do welfare activities. You know? Otherwise, they're very self-centered.
Yeah. So I'm wondering what rules that compassion, like meat eating, does, doesn't it?
Sorry?
The meat eating out of
it. Yeah, it gets you rid of quality of mercy and compassion. Intoxication, austerity. Austerity goes away.
Okay. Doesn't affect compassion?
More is meat eating. Mercy, your quality of mercy goes away. Compassion. That's why actually these four regulative principles, they upheld four legs of dharma in society. Like illicit sex cleanliness, externally, internally. Intoxication, austerity, meat eating, mercy, gambling, truthfulness. So in the age of Kali, only one leg is left. Even that is going away very quickly. Truthfulness, honesty. Other legs are gone. Actually in Satyayuga, all four legs were there. Then Treta, like that, one leg was going. Gradually.
We have gambling in society, so truthfulness has gone out of society.
It's gone way down, but still a little bit is there. A little bit honesty is still there. But that is also very quickly fading away. So, you know, like when Parikshit Maharaj, he was touring the kingdom, he saw Kali was killing the bull, and, you know, and the bull was only on one leg. So one leg is left. Any other points? Thank you very much. Granth Raj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.
And Madhya Prabhu ki.